Well, hello and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Yvonne E.L. Silver, coming to you live from the base of the Rocky Mountains here in Calgary, Alberta, which is delightfully sunny today after a lot of rain this long weekend. I'm glad I chose not to go camping. So this show, if you haven't tuned in before, is all about showcasing wonderful women. Women who have either risen through some sort of tragedy to triumph, or are doing interesting things around the world. And I first connected with my guest today, Linda Matthey, who I'll more formally introduce in a minute. First connected with her many years ago, actually, here in Calgary at an e-women event, and have just been so impressed with how she conducts herself in business. As an entrepreneur, a global traveler, author, and mentor, she's passionate about living a zesty life. So, Linda, are you on the line with me?
Indeed. Good morning.
Sorry, you sounded a little bit muffled there.
Oh, all right. Let me speak closer to the telephone. Good morning, Yvonne. Or I guess it's just early afternoon. Hello.
Hello and welcome. So for those who don't know Linda, I mean, I know that many people clicked on Facebook and smiled and acknowledged today when I advertised that Linda was going to be my guest. She is fairly well known in the entrepreneurial community here in Calgary. She's a global traveler. I mean, she spends quite a bit of her time living in Cabo San Lucas in Mexico. And then every spring, her and her partner Ron drive up from Cabo to Northern California and then head on to New York, as Ron is teaching tennis all summer in the Hamptons. He's a tennis pro, her partner. So she has an opportunity then to return to Canada, spend time with friends and family, do a little bit of consulting as a joint venture specialist in the petroleum industry where she has deep roots, and spend some more time eating great food, drinking fine wine, and doing all the other things that contribute to living a zesty and full life. So I'm glad that you could take a break and join me, Linda.
Oh, my great pleasure, Yvonne. It's been 13 years since we first met. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, I think probably not, because we all choose to keep in touch with people that we have common values with, we have great energy and connection with. And when I first met you, I think you might have been the regional director then for eWomen, and I was just impressed and struck by your very bubbly personality and yet expressed through a very calm demeanor, which sounds a little bit like an oxymoron, but I know you to be passionate and a thriving, living in a thriving way with your zesty life, and really taking in great food, visiting new places, travel and wine blog, author of 3 international cookbooks. I have a copy of the Fire and Ice cookbook and Light the Fire, Fiery Food, as both of those books. Have sampled some recipes from them, really interesting tastes. And when you wrote the series of cookbooks, I mean, you really were sharing that, that burning desire that you have for healthy, fiery foods of the world, and sharing your passion for anything fiery, creating a fabulous, fun, and flavorful food. But also, I think you live that life, don't you?
Well, I certainly try to. The books came about, I was working with a remarkable woman named Sherry Morish, and we worked together at an oil company, and after every weekend we'd talk about this great food that we had, prepared and shared with friends or family, and both of us passionately believed that food and beverage is the way that people connect culturally, that's how friends exchange, that's how families celebrate or commiserate around grief. Everything is based around food and beverage. First dates are usually around dinner or a coffee and Christmas dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, all of those things are so important culturally. Sherry and I both shared a passion for fiery food, and I don't just mean food with heat, but I mean food with attitude. So I wanted full, beautiful flavors. I've always said that, you know, I'd like to live a long, healthy life, but more importantly, I want to live a wide life, you know, where I've really experienced as much as I possibly can. And when I look back on my 40-year career, it all comes back to the common element of people and connecting people. So everything that I've undertaken has been around people, connection, and communication.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely living a zesty life and helping others do the same. And I think, you know, a little bit later on, we'll talk quite a bit more in depth about some of your newest projects in the last few years. We have a common interest in mentoring, which we'll talk about. And I also was, I know that you care deeply about the connection and people. And it reminded me, as I was looking over your bio, that you had spent many years as well fundraising and advocating for that small refuge for orphan children, abandoned and orphan children in Puerto Vallarta as well. And I'm not sure if you're still doing work with them. However, that was, I'm sure, very rewarding. And, you know, we can live great lives, but if we don't have purpose in our lives, it's kind of empty. I mean, you can make all the money in the world and not necessarily feel that you're contributing unless you have a social enterprise or a social enterprise, you know, passion and heart.
Thank you. Now, that's something you mentioned. And just to talk for a second about that, RISE, which was a Refugio Infantil Santa Esperanza in Puerto Vallarta, is still in existence. I'm no longer working with them only because my base of operations has gone across the Sea of Cortez. So I'm now situated in Cabo. So it just became untenable. But what I wanted to mention with that is my dear friend Jan, when I started traveling in Mexico and wanting to make a difference for the people and the community of where I was spending so much time. At that time, it was PV. My girlfriend Jan and I brainstormed, and we decided that a Pennies for Pesos campaign would be brilliant. So we started collecting people's change. You know, people don't want to roll their change. They just, you know, don't know what to do with it. And people would literally apologize to us when they brought us cans and bags of change that we would roll and convert to pesos for these children. And what I just like to say is it takes so little to make a huge difference. In a matter of 4 years, we managed to recruit all of the mattresses and bedding for up to 64 children. We were able to build a baby wash station. We were able to do some extraordinary projects, which seems impossible when it started with pennies. But guess what? Now that we have no more pennies, but nickels, dimes, quarters, loonies, and toonies add up very quickly. And it was a way that we could make a difference without people feeling that they'd already been tapped out with other charities. It was really a beautiful experience, I have to say.
Oh, Linda, I don't think you and I ever talked about that level of detail before on that project. That is beautiful and such a true reflection of, you know, when entrepreneurialism is done well, what a difference it can make and how we can very easily take those creative ideas and use them for good. I know that you've spent a lot of time working in, you know, oil and gas here in Calgary. And, you know, sometimes when I think about, you know, a traditional oil and gas company, you know, sometimes the assets are considered to only be the ones in the ground. And yet I believe, you know, without the people, there is no heart to the organization. And if we put the emphasis on, you know, what are the people doing that is good for the environment, good for the planet, good for the community, especially as you just demonstrated there, you're living in Mexico. How can you make a difference in Mexico? It's just so, so important. And when we engage the hearts and the minds of staff by using these kinds of opportunities to showcase, you know, the good that the business can do in the community, it really makes a huge, huge difference. So th- thank you for taking that on and sharing a little bit more about that project. That's beautiful. Now, I know that you also did quite a bit with... I know you also did quite a bit of work when you were putting your books together. So tell me a little bit more about how those cookbooks came about. You talked about, you know, working with Sherry, and then you went on and you did three. So sometimes authors just do one book, and then you ended up working, I think, with Inktree Publishing?
Right. So if you can tell a long story short for you. Sherry and I co-wrote the first book, which was the Fire and Ice Cookbook, Mexican Food with a Bold New Attitude. And we never wished to have a publishing house represent us. We knew right from the very beginning we wished to publish ourselves. So this goes back to 1994. This is quite a while ago. So we decided we were going to self-publish so we would have complete control over the design, the content, the marketing, every aspect of our book. And we went with a distributor slash printer that had dealt with the Best of Bridge series, which of course was an extraordinary success back in the late 80s into the 90s and early 2000s. So we knew wherever their book was represented or their series of books was represented, we would be represented. So we had, we worked 2 years on our manuscript. We both worked at a petroleum company full time, stayed at the office Thursday nights to work on manuscript, designed and developed new recipes weekends through the week. It took us 2 years. But once we had it printed and published, it was 10 months to national bestseller status. We were so delighted. Sherry decided to leave the business, which was, you know, very heartbreaking because we really did start this as a collaboration and a joint project. But she saw her life was going to go in different directions. She was 10 years my junior and, you know, looking at different places in her life, getting married, having family, just having enough balance for all. So she left the business and I carried on, which was a bit of a struggle. It took me 4 years to get my next manuscript together. And by this time, my flavors were more international. So my second book, which I released in 98, was entitled Light the Fire, Fiery Food with a Light New Attitude. So it was cooking light, flavorful food from around the world.
Right.
And that one hit bestseller status within the year as well, which again was wonderful. And then my third and final book, the Hot Sauce Bottle Cookbook, Recipes That Sizzle, Sauces That Cook, was done as a joint venture collaboration. So I should just preface that by saying that my specialty in the petroleum industry, I can't say oil and gas when I talk about publishing anymore, publishing hot food, because it can be misconstrued, too much oil and it produces gas. So I can't talk about that. So I say the petroleum industry. But it was a joint venture, which is my specialty, amongst one importer on the west coast of Canada and 10 manufacturers of hot sauce. So it was one South American, seven American, and two Canadian hot sauce manufacturing companies or brands of hot sauce. So that was a really fun project. From there, again, that one hit bestseller status. Yeah, that was fun, but it sort of took my joint venture expertise in a completely different direction, which we as entrepreneurs do as a regular course of habit, I think. Skills are highly transferable. I partnered with three other women, one other publisher, an author like myself, and two publicists, because what we observed in the self-publishing world was that people were very, very knowledgeable about their subject matter and they were very good authors, but they weren't good at the business. They weren't good at promotion, at marketing, at finding alternative markets, that kind of thing. So that was the company, Inktree Marketing, that we set up to handle those issues for other self-published authors. It's like artists, you know, they're great at creating their art, but they generally aren't good at marketing their art. Right. And nor should they be. They don't have to be good at everything. So that was the premise behind that company, and we had a lot of fun and a lot of great success with it.
It's interesting as I'm listening to you speaking, Linda, about the book and the world of publishing. You know how much it's obviously changed in that 20-year period. Certainly with my own book, it still took me 2 years from start of writing to actually get it on Amazon. And through, again, collaborative conversations, working over the course of pretty much a whole year with gearing up, with promoting it and getting the book video together and speaking publicly on stages about my book. And, I was lucky enough to attend an event in March, the Fearless Women's Summit, March of last year. And I think I had 80 pre-orders, and I didn't even have the book then. And so that was the added impetus to giddy up. And then I realized that, the actual writing part was only a quarter of the work. And getting editing and the re-editing and the spell check and the proofing and the design and all of those pieces ready so it could launch as a hard copy book as well as an ebook. That was, a lot more work than I anticipated. So things have changed. And yes, with the collaboration of numerous groups, especially my good friends at the Evolutionary Business Council, which is, a global organization of conscious business entrepreneurs, transformational change makers, the book hit bestseller the next day. So I'm excited that has now continued to be embraced. I just will be doing a book club launch with a company group here in Calgary tomorrow. I'm attending the first kickoff for that, which is lovely. And maybe now I'll just play the video, which is the video that I used actually for the launch last year. But there's several new listeners on the line who may not have seen or heard about Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. So we'll just run this short video, and then we'll get back to a few more questions. For those listeners who are wanting to ask you something and dial in, you can call into the live show by calling directly 1-888-627-6008 or direct dial 323-744-4831. So let's run the video clip.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations, is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.
Now, of course, that video was done for the launch last year, 2018. However, it's just lovely to, you know, much as you so passionately enjoyed watching the pennies pile up and what you could do with those pennies, it's equally rewarding for me when I take a stack of books to one of our local Calgary women's charities, not-for-profits, and foundations. So, you know, delivering a stack of books, you know, gifting books to the YWCA, to the Nest Foundation has had a couple of stacks. I've also had copies going out to BPW, numerous women's organizations, and they've also landed up with, you know, in the States as well, with G.I. Josie's as well, which is helping women veterans get back on their feet. So it's just so nice to be able to buy one and give one and have that donation. So before we move on, as a three-time best-selling author and then working obviously in Inktree Publishing, any particular lessons you'd like to share with first-time authors? I think we have a few listening as part of my community.
Yes, actually, one of, I believe, the best pieces of advice that I can offer, and I know that you took great advantage of this, Yvonne. You did so much of the work yourself, but at some point, you recognize that you couldn't do everything, nor should you necessarily do everything. So my advice to first-time authors is do what you do really well, and then look to others to support you on the things that, one, you either don't have enough time for, two, you're not particularly talented at, or three, just areas where you're looking for, you know, broader perspective. So a great example of that, Yvonne, was when you asked people, and you hired a formal editor, but you actually asked people to pre-read your book. And I was one of those people, and I felt so privileged to have that opportunity. So get that other perspective. But I've also counseled, for example, my niece, who it takes on the world, oh my gosh, but I really strongly encouraged her to delegate some of the tasks that she did not, in fact, have to do herself. You don't have to do it all. So reach out, get help, get support, get some good encouragement from your network. That would be my strongest encouragement.
Yeah, I so understand and appreciate that because, you know, I wanted to load it up as an ebook and have that available right away. And I've since been encouraged to do it as an audiobook as well. It's in the works. but certainly, I was delighted when I did reach out for referrals. My second editor ended up doing editing, proofreading, and then even taking responsibility for the ebook preparation and the formatting and the scrolls, the beautiful scrolls inside the page numbering and everything, which was lovely because I was really focused on the promotional aspect of it and collaborating with my community to make sure that it was going to land well. So great advice. Thank you. So as a global traveler, you know, you're exploring the world, you're based in Mexico, you come to Canada in the summer, thank goodness we get to connect then. Any particular surprises or celebrations in, you know, living in, you know, more than one country and doing the traveling that you do that you wanted to share as a global perspective and traveling?
Thank you. It's a great question, Yvonne. It really is. So we do spend a lot of time in Mexico. I get to spend a lot of time in Canada, but we also spend quite a bit of time in the U.S. and Europe when we can. The one thing that I find common with everywhere we travel, it's connection to people. People. It's always about the people. It doesn't matter so much about what you see or what you do. It's about the people you meet and the relationships and connections that you make. Those are the things that make life memorable. And I've just come to learn, or not learn, I guess I've known it for a very long time, but I'm now 60 as of this year, and I feel like I'm spending a lot more of my time not accumulating and not necessarily divesting, but rather editing. Editing so that I get more of what I want in my life, more relationships with people I care to be with, and filtering out the ones that I care less about, and certainly getting rid of material things. So it's not about the travel so much as it is about the people and connection. Mm.
So wisely said. I was listening, I can't remember what show it was I was listening to recently, and they said, you know, typically the size of your house very often is determined by the amount of stuff that you have. And then I watch the Facebook posts of, you know, collaborators and EBC members that are doing amazing things globally. You know, Daniel Gutierrez, for example, you know, very well-known speaker publicly, keynote, you know, paring down everything in his house to two suitcases so that he could go off and start a new life at his retreat center in Peru. I would have a little bit of a challenge with two suitcases, knowing that that was forever. I mean, that's how I came to Canada. I had two pieces of luggage for a 6-month work visa term when I was, you know, 21. But I knew that. I mean, I still have the rest of my possessions. Not that I had much back in at 21, but had the rest of my stuff stored at my mum's house in the loft in England. And I was told. I did believe it at the time, but I was told that I could ski on Grouse Mountain in the summer. So I diligently packed one suitcase with all my clothes and things and then brought my skis as the second piece of luggage. Well, guess what? I got to the top of Grouse Mountain with my skis, and there was barely enough snow to do anything. And I was thinking at the time, shoot, I could have packed a whole bunch of my really fashionable clothes from London and left my skis behind, because I really can't use them. I could have rented skis. And exactly. At the time, I really felt that, you know, the clothing market in Vancouver was about 2 years behind in fashion sense than where it was in
sure.
London, you know, going back a number of years, obviously, 30 years. But it's so interesting how we evaluate what it is that we're going to bring with us. So, yeah.
True. And when you're moving. Yeah.
Pardon me?
Oh, sorry. It's amazing how little we truly need insofar as stuff and what really has value. And ultimately, there's not much stuff that's of any great import.
Well, I tend to think, you know, if you can repurchase it, it doesn't have anywhere near the value as the things that are intangible that you just cannot buy. And relationships obviously fall into that category. Part of the reason that we've retained friendship over all these years is because, you know, I love spending time with you, and we get together, and, you know, it's always an interesting conversation. Time flies and goes way too fast. So paring down, that's the tip for the day. And as a Reiki practitioner as well, that's part of, you know, I'm a coach, I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I'm also a Reiki practitioner. I know that energy is so important, and the energy won't flow if you have piles of clutter. So another reminder, I have a little bit of decluttering to do in a few rooms right now. So that's because life has been very busy this summer with my son Alex and his challenges. So curious as well, you know, obviously as an entrepreneur, I mean, a lot of the things that are very typical of building and accumulating entrepreneurial passive income and wealth building, whether that's, you know, real estate and books and, you know, along with having some current income as well, like the joint venture contracts and things you take on. As an entrepreneur, I'm curious, you know, what have you seen shift over the past 20 years in particular that's really helped you create your own zesty lifestyle?
Great question, Juan. I would say what I've observed, I've certainly worked in major corporations, traditional corporations. So I've been in petroleum for 37 years, hard to believe. I like to say that child labor laws were a lot more relaxed when I started, but that would be, you know, false. Anyway, what I have observed is that certainly when I started in my corporate life, there was a lot greater loyalty between employers and employees back to employers. What I've seen in the last particularly 20 years is a degradation of trust and loyalty. I believe that there are no more maternal or paternal organizations that particularly care for their employees. People have learned to be very self-sufficient in the care and nurturing of their own careers. And as a result of that, I believe that what we've seen, and hopefully we're almost at the worst in the end of it, is where everything is based on corporate bottom line. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe that there's a pendulum, and I'm hoping we're at the far extreme end of the pendulum where that is what's most important. And we come back to, in my opinion, what has to be more important for businesses to flourish, for people to maintain positive, sustainable careers. We have to shift from business to business and business as profit to H, human to human once again. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that people shouldn't be entirely responsible for their own career trajectory, right, from planning through education, through execution, changes, etc. That should always be there. We need to look after ourselves first. But mm-hmm. in order to bring it back to meaningful, measurable results
in our businesses, it has to come back to a human level. So that's been my biggest observation.
Right. Yeah, I certainly echo that sentiment. I mean, as you know, I spent about 15 years working in senior HR roles, ending up working as a VP with a global talent management organization. So I've seen sort of the whole cycle. You know, when I first came to Canada in 85, in Calgary especially, it was right after there had been this depression, to say the least, you know, mortgage rates at things like, you know, 18-20%. But there was such a depression that everybody who, well, not everybody, but there were so many youngsters who were looking at their parents and saying, you know, I don't trust organizations anymore. I'm going to make sure I have a rock solid resume and rock solid experience. And whether that's through volunteering or whether it's through business, I don't want to be laid off and like my parents have just been, that whole sort of middle management layer. And then we went through a period of more richness where there was a lot of profits being made and organizations were reinvesting in their employees. I mean, I knew that for me, watching in HR, any time that there was a depression, the very first thing that always got cut was training. And so if you were a up and coming, a high potential employee, then you would not only look to your employer to be providing that 6% or whatever the number was for your organization of your salary as your training as a way for you to grow. You would start looking at other things. And a lot of times it's things that do count as an investment, such as coaching. And then also looking at things that very often weren't as big of an investment, like mentorship. And that's actually how I got my first interest in the topic of mentorship. And in the last few years in particular, have really embraced looking at how to set up, how to design, how to chair different sizes of mentorship programs for different groups and organizations, and really seeing the impact that can have on what I call innovation power, which is that piece that you were referencing just now, because employees who are not engaged do not give the organization any more than the basic job completion. They don't give that discretionary effort because they don't really want to be there. They're not feeling like they're being paid regularly. They haven't got an increase in 2 or 3 years. They're really not that motivated to do anything. And then when the cuts start happening, they just want to keep their head down and be under the radar and not even be noticed. So they're not going to be putting forward brand new ideas. And those are the ideas so many organizations need right now. The organizations need innovation. They need ideas to help bring in new customers, to look at ways to upsell their current customers, to retain employees. All those things that cost an organization money can very easily translate into ROI. So I see mentoring, and I wrote an article recently on this. Actually, you posted an article just recently too on mentoring.
But, I did.
You know, there really is a return on investment in putting focus on bringing mentorship into your organization. And if you don't do mentorship in your organization, guaranteed your competitor's going to be doing it. So at the end of the day, you can either have pairings with senior people in your own organization bringing up your young talent, or they're going to go outside for it. And they're probably going to get poached at some point by a competitor who really appreciates having a fully trained resource.
Oh, I was just going to say that Deloitte just released a recent survey, and it was quite interesting, and they were addressing concerns of the millennials. And essentially, when surveyed, this group of millennials that, and it would have been a comprehensive study, 75% of the millennials wished to have mentorship, but only 2.5% were actually receiving it. And it's been proven that people, particularly millennials, will stay within an organization up to 5 years, rather. They're twice as likely to stay if they receive mentorship for that duration of time. So you're talking about a significant rate of investment, return on investment, if you're having to cover that kind of turnover and hiring and all of that, that loss of knowledge. And it's just an extraordinary loss to companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that was part of our supper conversation when we got together recently and decided that we were actually going to put on an event. So if you haven't seen the posting yet, I'll provide a little bit more detail towards the end. But just be aware that here in Calgary at the Calgary Petroleum Club, Tuesday, September 17th for a breakfast session, there's more details about it posted on my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com, and it is spelled out A-N-D versus an ampersand. So wordswomenandwisdom.com. On the homepage there, The Art of Mentoring, it's a blue shot with a couple speaking, has a little bit more information about how you can register for that. So that's something that is up and coming in a couple of weeks. And you're doing some work with MentorCloud down in Silicon Valley, I understand, has a big goal of how many people do they want to have mentoring by 2020?
Well, we may have to extend that a little bit. We're on our way. It's 100 million people.
Wow. That's a massive goal.
Yeah.
So we'll do our part for sure. So we're actually having Dr. Ravi, who's the founder and CEO of MentorCloud, coming up from Silicon Valley to Calgary to share his expertise, having worked in that field. And, of course, MentorCloud is a very well-known platform for larger corporations, you know, Airbnb, Marriott Hotels, I'm sure there's a few others that you can quote, that want to really leverage the power of mentoring and tap into, you know, how do I elevate my employee engagement and what are some of the easy ways to do that and how can it be scalable? I mean, when you have a massive organization, I know when I was doing my own programs, the matching process is where it starts to be most time consuming, and having a great match is what makes all the difference. I know for myself it's been a great match with my proteges, and I've really enjoyed the relationship, and they've got a ton out of it. And some have come on, you know, come on afterwards to become coaching clients as well.
Wonderful. I made a point, that's one misconception about mentoring. It's not only of benefit to the mentee, but rather it's as much for the benefit of the mentor in satisfaction and information knowledge sharing. It's a tremendously mutual and beneficial relationship to both mentor and mentee.
It is. And I posted a few articles recently on LinkedIn. The last one was called The Power of Mentoring. And then there was also another one that I posted last year, I think, or actually, no, I did repost it this year. And it was referencing.
Huh.
Yeah, referencing some of those reasons why you might want to consider it. You know, we're all very
excellent article.
Thank you. We're all very busy professionals. And yet, at the same time, I know for myself, I've got so much out of those relationships. You know, I mean, first of all, I'm proud when I see her, you know, one particular mentor I met with last week. When I see her flourishing, it's so gratifying when she's speaking about, and, you know, this is not breaking any confidences, just in general concepts, but when she's speaking about things that she's doing and how she's using technology, you know, in a different way to what I'm using it as a, you know, an older person. I'm not using in the Snapchat, or I'm not using some of the same apps and tools and time-saving ways to leverage technology. I'm thinking about programs from a senior standpoint and forgetting that, you know, when I first started out, here are some of the things that I didn't have a grasp on, and oh, how useful that is to bring that into some of my new programs as well, working with women professionals who want to advance in their career. So it's just so valuable. I'm excited about this breakfast event because I know we both have a passion for it, and you have an experience too, didn't you, with working with someone who did or didn't want mentoring? Can you reflect on that for me?
I did, and this is, sure, of course. This is one of the contracts that I was brought in to fulfill as a joint venture professional. This would be 4 years ago. I was brought in not only to do a specific project, but rather I was brought in also to mentor a young woman in the area of joint venture, which again is my area of specialization. Well, the interesting thing was she didn't wish to be mentored. So that was a dismal failure, and I was so disillusioned about that. But sadly, there was an extraordinary young woman sitting next to me who had just transferred into the Surface Land Group who was desperate for a mentor, and nobody had the availability to support or mentor her. And it was really sad to see where one person wanted mentorship so much and the other person really didn't. So you really have to want to garner the wisdom of a mentor in order to grow. It's a real respectful relationship, and that inspired me. I just realized that people of my age, you know, we're seeing in many industries where people 45 plus are just sort of being discarded. There's so much wisdom with those people that's being lost in corporations and lost to the people who are being left to do more with less people. And I just think there's a wonderful opportunity to connect people who have knowledge and experience with those who want to learn. And that's what inspired me towards mentorship.
Mm. Mm. Well, in this day and age, particularly in Calgary, where it's still a bit of a depressed economy, I mean, hopefully things will turn around really soon, we really cannot afford to squander the opportunities of leveraging knowledge. I mean, there's, you know, the brain drain concept has been around for a while. You know, even though a lot of individuals who weren't expecting to get laid off now in their senior in their years are actually having to come back into the workplace part-time as consultants to bolster their RRSP and their retirement plans, you know, it's really important to have that current knowledge transferred over, and the relationships is a key piece. I mean, I know that for me, there's one or two people I can think of instantly who've made some amazing introductions for me to people I would never in a million years have connected with or had the opportunity to get a response from. And those are the kinds of things that I do for my protege too. And I know that that's a critical piece, along with the concept that, you know, oftentimes it's the young people who don't know the questions to ask because their mind has just not yet been expanded, and they don't have that perspective and depth, so they don't know what to ask. They don't know the questions, and that's huge as
right.
well. So, yeah. So it's going to be a fun event. Certainly we'll demystify this whole topic of collaborative, intentional conversations and how that can build a much stronger connection across an organization, as well as the whole knowledge transfer, promoting inclusion, looking obviously at how this impacts attracting, hiring and retention, but going deeper to look at some of these studies. And, you know, there was one that I saw recently through a diversity group that was talking about, you know, one in two women that haven't had the mentorship that they want and how that's impacted them. So there's tons of studies out there. We'll quote a few of those. I think Ravi is also going to be bringing up some of the copies of his book, The Art of Mentoring. I'll have my book available as well. And we're actually going to, we decided we would include those as part of the registration. And if you're listening and you're saying, wow, I've never thought about mentoring in this light, I'd really like to attend and explore that. But I know that, you know, I can't alone, even if I was interested in taking action today, I can't implement a mentorship program myself in an organization. There's going to be a number of other people involved. For this week, if you order your ticket in the next 3 days, we're actually going to open it up. And we decided we would let people bring a guest. So that was something that was new for this week. Bring a guest. It won't be an additional cost. If you've already purchased a ticket, you can do that. And if you're brand new, you can see on the website where there's an opportunity to also have two people attending under one ticket. So that's going to be awesome. What about your perspective on, you know, mentoring within large corporations, Linda? What else do you have to add that is a bit of a, I don't want to say a teaser, but unless you come to the session, you won't know about this.
Well, I think one of the great things that's happened over the last few years is the onset of tremendous technology to make things like a mentorship platform happen within a company, where we can actually use algorithms that make sure that we get the right matches, that we can actually create a platform in an organization that helps people find, connect, and engage people in meaningful conversations with people whom they normally would never connect with. So your best mentor, even though you're here in Calgary, may not be here, maybe in Singapore or in Moscow or some other place in the world. So a great place where we've learned great lessons about this is we're working with Marriott International, and we're literally connecting people all over the globe. So we're able to match them by hard values, by their softer values, making sure that the mentorship matches are the right ones for the right people. And it's really exciting to see what the technology has been able to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when I had taken over the mentorship chair role for BPW, I mean, BPW obviously is global, the local Calgary group had been one of the most successful chapters across Canada. And I think in the time that I had the chair role, there was 32 pairs. But imagine if that was 320 or 3,200 or 32,000 people that wanted to participate in the program. I mean, obviously, there's no way that I could have managed that. And also, you know, that was, you know, one of my volunteer projects. You know, some of the programs right. that I've gone on to design afterwards has been incorporating, you know, how can we do effective matching and screening? And yet I know that technology on a scale is really the way to go. So I'm really interested to hear what Dr. Ravi has to say and collaborate and participate in that event. So we're both going to be speaking. I know his work's been featured in, you know, Harvard and Forbes and Huffington Post and various other places. And he doesn't come up here very often, so I'm delighted to have a chance to make some introductions with him. And also, certainly with, you know, you and I bringing to the focus, you know, this whole topic of mentoring and the benefit it really can offer, as you started off, you know, one of your key things in life and to having a valuable life and making a contribution is all about relationships and collaboration. So I'm glad that we got to connect today on this show. And any final pearls of wisdom to share as we wrap things up here?
It was a great conversation, Yvonne, and I thank you for it, as I always appreciate our conversation. I think the thing to remember is it is about connection. And however we can use our technology to make a difference in this world, about making it more about person to person, giving people a hand up, and hopefully, you know, our technology allows us to do that, inspire women to step into more STEM roles, into more leadership roles, to create greater parity and equality in the workforce, to create better confidence, the work that you do. Let's work towards that as a common goal.
Well, that's beautiful. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, certainly there are so many more opportunities, I think, when we move from, you know, me to we, human to human, as you mentioned. You know, there really is a massive benefit in doing that because no one person can know everything. And it's not about what you know. It's about who you know. And I'm delighted that we've chosen to stay in touch and also that we've been able to put this awesome event coming up together, The Art of Mentorship. And with that topic, I mean, we really are looking at, you know, unlocking the power of mentorship. And we will dive in, because we'll have executives and HR leaders there. So we'll dive into this whole topic of, you know, how does it impact profitability and productivity and innovation, and reference some of these interesting studies. So thank you, Linda. It's a beautiful day, a lovely reason to connect, and you and I will be connecting in another couple of weeks in person at the Petroleum Club, Tuesday, September 17th. And just a reminder to look up the details for that particular event. Please go to my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com. It's right on the front page, a blue picture with a pair of a girl and a guy talking. And check out the Art of Mentoring, Unlocking the Power of Mentorship for Productivity and Innovation, and most importantly, profitability. Thank you, Linda. I look forward to seeing
Thanks.
You live in a couple of weeks.
Vaughn, I look forward to seeing you too. All the best. Thank you.
Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye for now.